Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Story Over Everything. I'm your host, Aaron Atwell, here as always with my co-host, Chaz Reed. I almost said your middle name, but I don't know if you want people to know your middle name.
Definitely don't.
Is it a secret?
Top secret.
Well, you called me Linwood last week, so...
Well, you better make up a dang old name for me.
I'm gonna keep it in my pocket for a minute.
So Linwood is a fake nickname, man. You can't get in my real nickname.
Okay, that's fair.
You can give me a fake nickname.
Okay, I'm gonna come up with one on this episode.
Cool.
You had a good week, man. Everything going well?
Yeah, man. I had a pretty decent weekend. Just got back from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And during that trip, I realized that I realized I am thankful for truck drivers.
Okay.
And two, I realized that I can't be a truck driver.
Fair.
So GPS nonstop is about 10 hours from my house, but you know, fuel and stopping traffic each way was 12 hours. I definitely felt like a truck driver. And you know what? Thank you to the Most High for everybody with his CDL. Cause I'm not one of them people. I give you 4 hours, you know, five is pushing it, and that's it. I'm done for. I don't want no more. So that was about it for me. What about your weekend?
My weekend was good. I don't even remember this. Why do you know what today is? If I'm being honest, it's Wednesday. I know that because we're doing the podcast.
That was it. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I got into this weekend, but I feel like it was fine. I mean, if there's no complaints, it was all right.
There you go.
Yeah, my son had his final regular season basketball game, played like absolute monster, won. So now we got a first round bye in the playoffs. So yeah, there's that. And then, of course, soccer starts Saturday, which I'm excited about. Cool. Well, today, everybody, if you're watching, you already know. If you're listening, you probably don't know. But we have a special guest today, and I know you've probably heard of Steven Spielberg. Just kidding. We got David Lee on. He's a California-based filmmaker, very talented guy. David, why don't you take a second, introduce yourself, and let us know a little bit about you.
Yeah, for sure. How's it going, everyone? My name, just like Aaron says, David Lee. I'm a cinematographer based in California, Los Angeles area. Also a filmmaker, so I do a lot of narrative work. But most of my work when it comes to just like the day-to-day stuff is everything from you name it, corporate, branded doc, commercial, advertising, retail is the majority of like the stuff that I do. That's pretty much the long story short, I guess. I guess kind of give you guys a little bit more. I worked in technology for like years. I worked in IT, and then one day just wasn't it, you know? So mm-hmm. I left that and then started from ground zero, no network, no experience on set, nothing, you know, just willing to do anything and everything to get experience and to learn. And, 7 years later, here I am. So
nice.
Still alive.
Still kicking.
Still kicking. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you started from tech and you came to the video world. What was it that transitioned you? You were working one day in tech, and then what happened where you think, yeah, I'd like to do this video stuff?
Not the most rainbow and sunshine of events. To be honest, I had a friend commit suicide. One day his daughter found him in the backyard, you know?
No way.
And it was one of those things it was one of those things where, you know, I really just started to think about my life. You know, I was like, man, dude, life is very short. You mm-hmm. never know what's going to happen. And I don't know. I've always been someone that like, as being Asian American, especially being Chinese American, you know, like you really are raised to only be one of three things. Like, that's just how it is. You know, mm-hmm. like you're either some kind of doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. Anything else is like not accepted, you know?
Sure.
And I didn't want to do any of those things. I was like, as a kid, I was like, you know, running around and again, like, you know, academics, I could care less. Like, you know, school is not my thing. Minus English and like science, I think were the only things that ever interested me in, you know, and I think that helped it a lot, especially now as a filmmaker and, you know, writing scripts and working with writers. And even if it's just for like a branded commercial or something, you know, like how to tell a story, you know? So I think that's why English kind of helped me when I was younger and why I excelled at. But yeah, you know, I it's just one of those things where like, I didn't know what I wanted to do for like years. High school, didn't know what I wanted to do. College, I like bounced from one department to the other. And it's like, man, like none of this stuff like excites me at all, you know?
Right.
But I was always good with like computers, you know, like I remember like in high school, I would like help my buddies like build computers and we'd go to the computer fair and like buy parts and put them together and things like that, you know? So, kind of pressured into making a choice, you know, I was like, well, I guess I'll go into IT, you know, it's like decent money and that sort of thing, you know? So yeah, I spent seven years of my adult life in IT and then worked up, you know, to the ranks of, you know, being a manager of global operations. So I would like travel to fucking India and Canada and Israel and blah, 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 you know? So it was cool. You know, I think what that honestly did, cause I used to work at the end of my career was like working in mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. So that helped me a lot now when I work with larger brands and corporations, you know, to understand like what kind of like their mindset is when it comes to the business aspect of things. But yeah, other than that, I mean, it was just, yeah, my buddy, you know, kind of ended his life prematurely and, just started thinking, you know, so, put in my like 1 month notice. I was at least nice about that. Put in my 1 month notice and saved up all the money, took all my stock options and just, you know, got the hell out and literally took like 7 months just doing nothing, kind of just figuring out what I wanted to do, you know? Sure. And I was watching a documentary on like YouTube. I think it was YouTube or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it had captivated me so much just watching this like documentary, you know? And it reminded me of like when I was a kid and, you know, someone that was a very kind of like a visual learner. And, you know, talking earlier how like I spent most of my younger years and teen years in martial arts, like, you know, back in the day, my parents weren't wealthy at all. So, you know, I didn't have like video games, you know, until like later on. Mm-hmm. But I would take like little action figures, like G.I. Joes and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and like random Legos. And I would like, I would make like fight scenes and I would have like, you know, like a beginning and middle and an end, like, you know, like the characters would like have to traverse this little, I used to have this, like, I remember my uncle bought me this like pop-up book. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you guys remember pop-up books.
Yeah.
And I got me a pop-up book for like Christmas. And I would use every page of that pop-up book and I would create like scenes and stuff, you know, like, and anyway, so then later on, I saw a documentary and it just reminded me of like my childhood and like how much I loved like storytelling and the emotionality behind it, you know? So that's what I decided to do. And that's what I do now.
And that brings you here to today.
It is, yes, sir.
Well, David Lee is just built different, folks. Tune in next week. Oh, no.
Appreciate it.
Very cool. Very cool story. So this week, we want to talk a little bit about branded documentaries. And I say branded documentaries, I don't know if a lot of people know exactly what I'm talking about. But I think we could group in like narrative commercial work. And I want to make sure I paint a clear difference for the audience. When I say a branded documentary or narrative commercial work, I mean where, you know, it's connected to a brand, but the brand is not the main character, essentially, where there's a story taking place. And a lot of times the brand just happens to be a part of it. But, you know, there's a character and there's a journey and there's an arc. Does that make sense? Did I explain that okay?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So, In your words, David, what would you describe, you know, if you're thinking, I got to tell somebody what a branded documentary is, how would you describe it?
For me, if someone asks me what a branded documentary is, whether it's someone on the street or if it's a potential lead, anything in that in between, it's essentially a way to tell a company or a brand's story through cinematography, through the visual language, you know, visual and auditory language. So it's how to emotionally connect a the plain way to say it is like how to emotionally connect a customer to be inspired to buy a product or a service, right? Mm-hmm. And not like just selling them an ad like, hey, 15% off, buy this thing now, or you know, brand new in stock item and some flashy B-roll, you know, buy now or something. You know, mm-hmm. It's like that's the run of the mill stuff that we see on social media feeds. But many companies, many businesses, they do both, right? Especially at the larger ones. They have the regular, like vanilla salesy kind of ads. And then mm-hmm. they have the branded content, you know, where that be a branded documentary, a short form, verite, or even scripted, branded documentary type of content. Mm-hmm. Where again, you know, you're kind of like following someone's journey. Could be the CEO, it could be it could be an actor, you know, who is playing the role of an employee or anything like that, you know. So that's kind of what branded documentary is in a nutshell.
How much of that that process, and I don't want to get too far ahead because we have, you know, some steps to take, but how much of it is being able to paint a picture where someone can see themselves in that story? Is that a part of it?
I think that's like that's all of it, you know, because if you, it's all of it. Yeah. If a potential customer, right. Mm-hmm. Potential customer, if they can't see themselves emotionally connected to this person they're watching or these people that they're watching, this scene that they're watching, you know, they're not going to be invested at all. If they're not going to be invested emotionally, you know, and not to say that like, you know, the goal isn't to emotionally force or persuade someone to just buy something like willy-nilly, you know, especially if it's like a high ticket item, you know, if it's something like a service or a product that's like $500-$600, like, you know, that's like sleazy sales right there, right? If you're just trying to persuade someone to buy it, you know, and they're like, oh man, I can't afford this thing, but I'm going to buy it anyways, you know? The idea is to inspire someone to connect with the brand, and then hopefully through that process, then they can choose to buy the product, buy the service, or be invested in the brand some way, shape, or form, you know?
Mm. That was beautifully said.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I prefer. That's the way that I like to work with clients. Again, like, you know, I've shot for, you name it, you know, like Toyota, Volkswagen. I've shot for, you know, ads for Walmart, Lowe's. I've done small businesses, medium businesses. I've done the whole gamut, you know, and every business is different. But, you know, working in the world of advertising, yeah, and we do the retail ads that are just like, you know, B-roll of scrolling through different things and just buy it or whatever, you know, and then we do the branded content where we try to tell stories, you know, and that's what inspires me more, you know. It's like going back to that documentary that I saw years ago. It's like, man, I would love to do this for a living, like inspire people through storytelling, you know, and through that avenue, you know, through advertising and retail and commercials. That's the medium that it takes. Sometimes it's the vanilla, you know, 15-second ad, vertical ad or whatever, and then the other times we have an opportunity to really tell like a story, you know, about someone or something and how it connects to that brand.
Absolutely. Chaz, you have anything there? I got a question to move on to, but I want to make sure I don't just keep talking.
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
All right. So, David, as I think I told you, most of our audience are freelancers or owner operators where, you know, they're in charge of the sales process, the lead generation, you know, the shooting, the editing. They may have help or may have, you know, some help, like not employees, maybe contractors, some type of assistance. But at the end of the day, the buck stops here. So let's say if you were telling one of these people, or maybe they asked you for some advice, and you have a meeting with a customer and a potential customer, how do you know, are they a good fit for narrative work like this, branded documentaries, or should they stick to the more, you know, like you said, vanilla stuff, you know, just standard ads or commodity type things?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, even before you even get to that point, you know, like if you're pitching the, because the discussion is different if you're pitching the client versus if they're coming to you because they love your work and they want to work with you, you know, like they see that you've done branded documentary type of work and that's what they want. They reach out to you. That discussion is very different if you're just coming and cold pitching. You know,
I don't love cold pitching.
It's definitely an art form, and I'll be honest, I suck at it. It's not my thing, you know. Like the vast majority of my work, you know, agencies and production companies come to me because they just see the work that I've done, you know. But I've done my fair share of cold pitching when it comes to branded doc or commercials, you know, especially. And it's you're always fighting an uphill battle if you're trying to impose your vision on someone else. You know what I'm saying? Like if you go to BMW and you're like, hey, I want to shoot this, you know, amazing ad. It's going to be, you know, a 7-day shoot, and we're going to be shooting in Utah, and then we're going to go to like New York and all this kind of stuff. They may say cool, or they may say, oh, we don't need that. You know, so you're kind of like, you can't force your vision. Again, that's part of like the pitching process. But I would say for anyone who's a freelancer, a owner operator, you're a one man band or a small production company where you shoot, you edit, you deliver, and you're also pitching the ideas, you're doing the storyboards and all that jazz, is really just, you have to understand the client first. You have to understand your customer first, like through the discovery engagement, ask them those questions, you know, ask them like, what is it that they want? And then identify what they actually need, you know, because if you can deliver what they actually need, then that's a win-win situation. You cut out all the fluff, and should they want the fluff, then that's great. You just charge them extra for the fluff, you know, or whatever you want to do.
Sure.
But if you identify what they need, then they feel like they're getting exactly what they actually need for the business to grow, for them to make their sales numbers, for them to scale their business, and they feel like their money is being well spent, you know. So yeah, like during the discussion, like if they start to say something like, oh, you know, we really want to be able to like tell our story, or we want to be able to tell our customers' story, then that's a great indication for you to again keep asking your questions, but it's a good indication that they may want something in the lines of a branded documentary film, or you know, series of short films, like, you know, 2-minute, 3-minute long short form type of things.
Sure. And I've always found that to be true, that if you are cold, you know, you're cold pitching, you kind of lose all your leverage. Whereas if someone comes to you, you know, you have something to work with as far as, well, you want me. But when it's cold, you really have to be vulnerable, and you know, you lose that leverage, which is always tough in the sales process, to not be working with any leverage at all. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because it's, you have to put yourself in like the customer's perspective, you know, like if, I don't know about you, but I dislike when, someone's trying to sell me something, and I know when they're trying to sell me something. That's my job. You know, that's part of my job. It's like, I know when they're trying to sell me something, and I don't want it. You know, so you kind of have to put yourself in that perspective instead of always trying to chase the lead, you know, build your company up in a way where they come to you instead, you know. And obviously there's always a balance between it. You know, there may be a really cool business in your area, even if it's a local small business, but you're like, oh man, like this business is really cool. Could be like a boutique shop or whatever it is. So in that instance, then you have to be resilient enough to go pitch that client, like, hey, I have this idea, you know, branded documentary, it'll be really cool. And then you give them the reason why it would be really cool for you to shoot content for them, and then you go about like the budget and all that kind of stuff. You know, it is an uphill battle, but again, if you're very passionate about anything in life, then I feel like you're already a step ahead, you know, versus like, oh man, I gotta make the rent this month, let me go see what I can pitch. It's like, that's not the way to do it, you know.
Yeah. That's never going to come across as genuine that way either.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're just like that door-to-door salesman just trying to make numbers, you know?
Nobody wants that. Everybody hates that. I think everyone hates it. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure. Yes.
All right, let's move on to the next segment here. The process. You know, and this is just, of course, your experience, probably no hard and fast rules. But when you're going into, let's say now you're out of the stage where you're trying to get this customer to agree to it, or maybe they've come to you and you guys have settled, okay, we're going to do this project. What's the process from there as far as finding the story? Do you meet with them and you have a story in mind going in, or is this something that sometimes maybe you're doing the interview portions and you're listening for, you know, some kind of keys where you can think, okay, well, that's going to be, you know, a part of the story. Do you have a goal in mind? You know, how does that work?
Yeah. Usually the goal is to identify what the story is, really, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if I always do sort of like a pre-interview with the client, you know, so let's just say randomly, let's just say the client is like a welding shop or something. Right. Mm-hmm. Then I go to the owner of that shop or that business. And I have like a, you know, once we settle on, okay, cool. Like, you know, this is the budget's cool. We're signing off on it. These are like the deliverables, all like the logistical things. Sure. Right. And then I have a pre-interview with the owner to kind of like, hey, like, let's get to know your business. Like, you know, where did you come from? Where is the inspiration? Where is the passion? Why is this business here? Why did you open it up in the first place? You know, some of the key points, right? Some of the struggles. I'm not trying to get super in depth. I'm just trying to get like the bullet points of like the highlights, right? Mm-hmm. And then from there, I can extrapolate to when we do the actual sit down interview to get more into the details, the nitty gritty, to have more of like that conversational flow with the client. Because at the end of the day, like I prefer interviews that are more conversational because mm-hmm. they're more human. It has more of the sure. of a human touch to it than just okay, I'm pretty sure I've been there thousands of times, you know, where the producer, again, nothing against them, but it's like they just have a list and it's like, okay, question one, okay, they don't even look at the client, they don't even look at the interviewee. It's like, okay, question two, question three, I'm just like, god damn, this is boring as hell, dude. Like, you're not even talking to them. Just ask them questions. Like, right. You might as well just have b-roll. Why even do the interview, you know? Again, to each their own. But that's sort of like the beginning process, is have that pre-interview with the owner or the client and get to know, like, you know, why they opened up, what their business is about, why they felt so inspired to open up their business or start this product line or product launch. And then get those highlight points written down. And then from there, you can start to devise your storytelling, right? Like, how are you going to actually edit all this stuff? You know, like, what kind of inserts do you need? What kind of B-roll do you need? What kind of maybe the budget isn't that big, so you have to rely a little bit on stock footage. That's totally fine too. You know, mm-hmm. What kind of music was best match this project? What kind of, like, you know, sound design do you want in it? And then from there, you can go through your pre-production process as far as, like, okay, like, you know, getting visual references, looking up the brand's color palette, you know, what kind of colors do they use in their brand, what kind of messaging do they have, mission statement, things of that nature.
Sure, man, it's a true expert over here, Chaz.
I don't know about that. I guess I'm decent at what I do, so hopefully
yeah. helps out other people. No, I've seen your work, that's why I invited you on today.
I appreciate it, man.
Excuse me. Yeah, so that makes sense. And that's how, you know, I assume one would go about it, but being that you're well into the world of the narrative type work, I did want to ask, because I know people would want to know, where do I get this story from? So I definitely understand that. Chaz, what do you got there about that story, the story part?
No, I'm just taking notes, bro. I'm listening to the podcast.
He's vibing. He's vibing.
Yeah, I'll tune in at the end. Don't worry about me.
See, David, we always have a segment every week. It's called the Nugget of the Day. And okay. You may have seen the NOTD in your notes. The Nugget of the Day is where Chaz really shines, and he comes through with, you know, a powerful piece of wisdom for these filmmakers out here.
I love it.
Shines. Yeah, okay.
All right. So let's say, excuse me. So now we've passed the point where you've had this meeting with the owner or the decision maker, whoever it is, to get the idea behind the story. when you go into the shooting stage, you mentioned earlier in the episode having people create you know, an emotional investment into a company. Mm-hmm. When you're shooting, how do you shoot in a way that matches the emotional investment that you want them to have? So I assume, you know, if it's a like a midwife service, well, you're going to want that person to be happy and in a great, you know, mindset. Or if it's, you know, something maybe a little more rough around the edges, well, you probably want them to have a different emotion. You know, a tattoo shop probably would want a different emotion than a midwife service. So how do you shoot in a way that matches it?
That's a really good question. I feel like how I would approach, because every business is different in what they like offer in the tangible sense. A midwife service is different than a tattoo service, you know. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, though, once you get better at understanding what a strong story is, like the emotionality behind it, I think it's I go back to just the basic rules of cinematography and this more so the cinematic language, right? It's like, how do I actually tell a story, whether that be through a photo or through a series or through a video or a film, right? Like what connects people? And I think what connects people is your ability to, you know, use the lens, use the camera, use your ability of lighting to help shape and craft something that catches your eye, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, say for like the tattoo shop, you know, if you're creating a branded doc for this tattoo shop, you know, it's easy to go in and say, oh, I'm just gonna shoot some whites, some mediums, and some tights, and then call it a day, you know? And that's one way to approach it. But if you're not able to connect the interview, the audio portions of the interview, right, the sound bites, to the visual portions, then all you really have is just B-roll, right? Mm-hmm. And it's called B-roll for a reason. It's not the main thing, you know? So if that's all you're doing, then you could definitely improve upon that style of storytelling, you know. The most important part for me is I feel like it really comes down to your ability to connect the camera and the lens and the lighting, all that, right? Cinematography, right? That's what I do. If your ability to connect all those things to the visual piece, to the audio piece. Oh, sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Is what sets things apart, you know, than just running and gunning. And again, not to say that running and gunning doesn't work. It obviously works. You know, that's a lot of content we see today out on social media. But the client doesn't want like run and gun. They don't want the run in the mill stuff. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're contracting you. They're working with you because of your ability to tell a story in a very specific way, you know? And so I tell people, like, you know, once you get used to the technical stuff, like, you know, like the ISO and the white balance, like the basic stuff, right? You know, like your zoom lens, and prime lens, right? Then it comes down to, okay, how do I learn lighting? Because if you look at any film, this is just my mindset. And I might be completely wrong about this, but I look at any film and I'm like, dude, this is beautiful. I don't even look at the lighting. I don't even look at the camera movement. I'm just so captured by it, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you like zoom your lens out, and then you go into the details of it, you're like, oh, you know, they decided to use a prime lens versus a zoom lens. They decided to use a dolly versus a gimbal. They decided to, you know, light using these fixtures versus, you know, natural light or whatever it is, right? All that actually does help your ability to sell something, you know. And so that's how I would like approach that question. That makes any sense?
Sure.
I don't know, probably not.
No, it makes great sense. So speaking of shooting, and this is kind of a simpler question, how much do you shoot? Do you tend to overshoot? Do you undershoot and shoot more later? How do you do that?
You know, it's evolved. I feel like when I first started, I would shoot like anything and everything, because I didn't really know, right?
Right.
And then that sort of evolved into shooting less. But then over time, sometimes I would shoot not enough. So now it's at the point where pre-production helps out a ton, right? Mm-hmm. Having your shot list, having your storyboard, making sure that you get what you need, because you know from your experience it's gonna be helpful in the edit. And then once you have everything in the can, so to speak, then that gives you the opportunity to say, you know, I have an extra few minutes. It might be cool to get this shot and then just go shoot it, you know, regardless of how it looks, or if you don't have time to light it, it's like, hey, let's just get this really quick because it might help out in the edit. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's not like, you know, it's taking you like another hour to set up this scene or something. So, you know, we have an extra few minutes. Let's just go shoot it and see how that works out. So my best piece of advice is really, and this is something that I do, right, is like, is go into pre-production, have your shot list, work with the director, or if you know, if you're like a freelancer or owner operator, if you're the one doing it, make sure that you have your shot list down, make sure you have your storyboard you don't need both, but have your shot list down, so that way you're getting the things that you absolutely need, and then having an opportunity and free time to get stuff that that may help out in the edit.
Yeah, add some of that seasoning, maybe some little extra tidbits.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you know, there's been plenty of times where in the edit you're like, oh man, I wish I had a wide shot of this thing, and you're like, dang it, you know. So the next time, or you make the mistake, totally fine. The next time, make sure that, okay, cool, last time I forgot to get the wide shot, I absolutely need to get the wide shot for this thing because it's going to help out, you know. It does, because the coverage isn't necessarily like just having random B-roll, right? Your job isn't to shoot stuff randomly. Your job is to have a very specific vision, and based upon that vision, you use the principles and the rules of cinematography to support you, you know. Like, you have your, you know, say there's a scene of someone like sawing like planks of 2x4 wood or something like that, right? If you have your wide, you have your medium, you have your close up, you have your inserts, you have a little mini story right there, you know. So, or maybe you just shoot the whole thing in a wide, right? I mean, like, I'm not saying what to do. I'm just saying that if the better you get at watching other people's work that you're inspired by, other filmmakers, other commercial filmmakers, directors, photo books, old black and white stuff. Like, the more you take the time to understand what inspires you, then you sort of like kind of just copy it in a way, you know, where like you go through and you're saying, oh, I don't know if this is going to work, let me just try it. And you just shoot this whole scene in a wide, right? And then you're in the edit and you're like, okay, this works, or it may not work, but it's through like trial and error. It's through trying things out and then learning from your mistakes. That's how you get better. You know, that's what I did. I failed a lot, you know. Some stuff just didn't work, and I learned from it. You know, it's like, oh, I could probably shoot this whole thing as a wide. And then later on, you're like, oh damn, I really could use like an insert, or I could use a close up like that, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like, to me, things that help at the shooting stage are really two things to me. Number one is preparation before the shooting happens. Going in with a plan in mind is going to serve you better. And then the second part is, for B-roll, it has one goal. It's to serve the story. If it's not serving the story, you know, it's kind of doing a disservice almost, to where you could have used that time more wisely. And now it's kind of taking away from the story.
I mean, everyone's workflow is different. Everyone's mindset is different. I'm someone who I appreciate efficiency, and especially when it comes to on set, you know. The budgets, the project scale at the end of the day, you know, if for people who are still one man band type of workflow. Or maybe you have like a camera assistant on the day, or a grip or something like that on the day, right? You only have so much time to shoot this thing that you're being hired to shoot, you know. It could be a one day thing, or it could be a day and a half thing. But if you don't go in with a plan of action, I feel like you're just setting yourself up to fail and not setting yourself up for success, you know? So the more time you prep, it's like team sports, right? It's like there is no professional or college team that just, all right, we're just gonna show up and play. It's like, no, like, they have a plan.
You gotta practice,
you gotta train, you gotta hit the weight room, you gotta work on your skills, individual skills, you gotta work on your drills, you gotta work on the team drills, right? You gotta work on the plays. And then on the day when you actually get to the game, then things might change. you know, the other team might become in with different plays that you're not used to. So then that's where the problem solving of filmmaking comes in, right? But if you just go in kind of willy-nilly, I feel like you're not using your time to the best of its capacity, you know. As much as I love being on set, I also have a cutoff. It's like, I don't want to be on a 14-hour day. I've done those. You know, they suck. Right.
Yeah,
you know? And a lot of it is just, we're just waiting around, you know? So it's like, hey, let's just, if I can do this in 10, I'm going to do it in 10, you know? So pre-production, planning, have a plan of action. And then on the day, if things change, like weather might change, talent might not show up on time, might be an hour late, technical difficulties. For some reason, your gimbal isn't working. For some reason, one of your lights just won't turn on, right? Then you kind of have to go with the flow and say, okay, well, you know, if I can't have this light, you know, shooting outside the window, we may have to change the angle a little bit or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that makes great sense. Which would bring me into our next topic, which would be the editing stage. So, I mean, I think you gave a great, so far you've given a great groundwork. As far as, you know, just really an overall feel, what is this thing? How do you do this thing? And we've talked about, you know, speaking to customers about it. We've talked about shooting one. And now I want to talk a little bit about editing one. You know, editing can be one of those things that is very streamlined, but it can also be one of those things that eats up unlimited time and resources. Mm-hmm. So when you come to the edit, if you're editing, or maybe if you're directing, you're sitting in with an editor, however, what's the best way to start a narrative edit like this? Do you start with sound design? Do you find a song or a set of songs or a feeling that you think, okay, well, this kind of speaks to what the customer would need? Or do you just start going through your footage? Are you looking at dailies? Are you just scrubbing and finding and, you know, marking things? How would you approach it?
Yeah, definitely the latter, you know. I always have at least like a couple of different music tracks and Foley and sound design,
right,
during the pre-production stage, kind of just to get me inspired and then see. Again, I'm a very visual person, you know, so even if it doesn't work, I just like to think, oh, maybe this track might work, whether I use it or not. Sure. I don't pay too much attention to it. It's more just for my own ADHD, you know. And then, well, once we're done shooting, production's done, we're wrapped production, now we're in post-production, I kind of just go through the footage. I scrub and I start kind of just putting different clips together on a base timeline. No audio, unless it's like an interview portion, but I kind of just start scrubbing, seeing, okay, what works, what connects, what doesn't connect. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I do is I always re-listen to the interview, you know. So I watch the interview and then I make I use Resolve, but you can use it in Premiere or whatever edit NLE you're using. But I always make markers, you know, and I color code the markers. I time code the markers, you know, to say, okay, this portion is like 5 minutes long and this portion is 3 minutes long. And then I color code them and I make notes on them. So that way, when I'm in the edit, I can start to chunk up and put the pieces of the puzzle together, you know, like right, the beginning, the middle, and the end of it. Organizing the clips and bins is always super helpful. So that way you're not just, you don't have just one bin full of like everything, you know. You can separate things. So that way, again, efficiency, you can get to that section of B-roll, that section of the interview faster, because you know exactly, you know, it's in this specific folder or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And then, yeah, color coding things. Again, I'm a visual person. So I color code each audio track and each video track, just so it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, yellow is more important. Green is sort of just like a broad idea. Blue is just kind of like vanilla standard thing I can just put in there really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that to kind of help me organize the timeline itself. Because timelines can get very messy. You know, they can get long and you just have like tracks, you have vertical and you're like, oh man, I have no idea where this thing goes. Or sometimes you're like, let me combine this track with this one. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh damn, I forgot to save it. And now it's some weird weird Frankenstein track. How do I fix it? You know? But that's also fun too. You know, sometimes you just make those little silly mistakes and you kind of laugh at it. And, oh man, that's kind of funny, you know? So that's like the general overview of how I go into editing and putting together the timeline. Yeah, I mean, best thing I could say is, like, again, organize your bins, color code things in the interview portion, like make markers so that way you can easily get to them. And sometimes you kind of have to watch and listen to the interview like multiple times, you know, like on the day is one. And then when you bring everything into post, that's the second one. And then sometimes, you know, I'll rewatch and re-listen to an interview like four or five times before I kind of get it ingrained in my head, like, you know, what they're really saying to the camera, what they're saying to the audience.
Sure. And do you ever watch a movie or a documentary, something that you really connect to get inspiration for projects? When I don't know if you use it during the editing stage per se, but do you ever draw inspiration from those things, like types of shots you like, mm-hmm. or types of flows and things?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I may not necessarily do it during the edit. It depends on how long the piece is. If it's like a 1 minute thing, generally not. But if it's right. like longer form, or anything between, like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes long, which is fairly long for a long form content, then I will, for sure. You know, I'll look at some of my favorite documentary series or documentary films just to kind of get some inspiration, even narrative films, you know, mm-hmm. just the way they shoot the coverage and the way they edit, you know. So I definitely do get a lot of inspiration from new and old favorite TV shows, streaming shows, documentary films or documentary series especially.
Absolutely. I know that wasn't really a big part of that segment, but it popped in my head and I wanted to ask, because I know as creative sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. You're totally right. I feel like, you know, I if I'm not watching something, I tend to kind of lose inspiration, you know, because I'm like,
yeah,
because I feel like I'm doing just the same thing over and over again. And truth be told, that's like almost like 90% of the job is you're really just redoing the same thing over and over again, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to every now and then see something different. And you're like, oh man, like that's really cool that they you know, put these segments together, and I would have never thought about that. Or, you know, the sound design is just so unique. You know, I kind of want to experiment and try something like that the next time I have this opportunity, you know. Or lighting, you know, or acting or blocking or whatever it is, right? Because you can always implement those things. You know, even though we're not, you know, you're not shooting like some huge Netflix budget thing, but you can extrapolate and get like kind of like a bird's eye view, mm-hmm. to say, oh, like, you know, there's this scene in this little film or whatever it is that two people are next to a window and they're talking to each other, right? I guarantee you're going to shoot something where there's going to be two people and you're like, oh, there's a window here. Let's have them talk about whatever it is, you know. So again, maybe the budget is zero, you don't have the huge lights that they have, you don't have the crew, but it gives you that idea of like, okay, cool, like if I have a window, I have a light, essentially, you know, mm-hmm. some form of a light, and I have the coverage, I can shoot this wide two shot, and I can shoot the coverage here, and then based upon that, I can, you know, then create this scene that I can use in the edit, you know. So definitely, yeah, watch a lot of films, watch a lot of documentaries, watch a lot of miniseries, and kind of just get the juices flowing, you know, for the inspiration.
Yeah, that's what I was going to finish off by saying, that as creative people, you know, I don't have any issues anymore with like the task of things. But sometimes, you know, when that fatigue or that burnout starts to creep in, you start, like you said, you start to feel like you're doing the same thing, and you crave something like, well, I want to create something new. So I find also that watching something and getting some inspiration of things like, oh, I could like to try that. Or, you know, maybe this type of shot could help this type of project better. And I was just curious how you felt about it, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Same with you.
Chaz, you look deep in thought over there. It looked like you were writing.
I told you, man. Ray, hey. Hey, stop messing up the vibe, man. Just keep it going.
Hey, we're still going. I was just checking on you over there. You look.
Keep it going, man. Until you see me fall out of this chair like old buddy did, then you just keep it going.
I hope he's okay, by the way.
I hope so, too.
All right, David. So let's talk about this next. If let's say you ran into someone today, they're a videographer or whatever, and they say, hey, David, I heard you on this podcast. I want to do branded documentary work, and they wanted to start today. I think I know what you might say, but what advice would you give them?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question, man. That's a loaded question. I would say if they've been at least, you know, doing it for a year or two, you know, like they're super fresh, you know, whether they went to film school or not, or they want to create content, you know, they want to make a life out of this and a business out of this. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to specifically do branded documentary. I think my biggest piece of advice, I mean, there's like 100 things I could tell this person, you know?
Right.
I would say, as long as you're passionate about branded documentaries, then you're going in the right direction. But if you're just doing it because you saw some fancy documentary, you know, and you know nothing about the industry at all, mm-hmm. and you're doing it just because you want to, you hate your job or you hate school or whatever, and you want to do something because you want to make money, I would say that's the wrong way to look at it. You know, yeah. As long as you're passionate about it first and foremost, that's the most important thing. All the other bullshit stuff will come. The technical stuff, the knowledge, the experience, all that stuff will come. But if your intention for doing it is wrong in the beginning, then that's something that I would ask that person to kind of like revisit and mm-hmm. sort of just, you know, ask themselves, like, hey, like, what, why do you really want to make, you know, branded documentary? You know, because most people I meet, it's like, oh, hey, how do I make videos? It's like, cool, you know, like I can, easy question, you know?
Right.
But if someone's like, I really want to make films, I want to make narrative films, and they're like 18 or 19, that's a very different question, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man, there's 100 different things I could tell that person, but
sure.
Biggest thing is like, yeah, as long as you're passionate about it, like you really want to make doc films, and then you can kind of get to the deeper question, right? It's like, why do you want to make doc films? It's like, oh, and then based upon that answer, then you can kind of guide them in the right direction, you know, because we live in an age of fast and easily accessible information, you know, like you don't mm-hmm. necessarily need to go to AFI, you don't need to go to film school, you know, if all you're looking for is like the technical part of it, which is part of it, you need to know how to turn on the camera, you need to know how to how ISO works, how shutter angle works, how shutter speed works, you need to know aperture, like the technical stuff. Right? Sure. Like you need to know the basics of it. But you know, you can find it online. There's so many YouTube videos out there or Skillshare or any of these online courses, you know, mm-hmm. but the reason for doing something is always very different, you know? So yeah, I would just ask that person, you know, why do you want to make documentary films?
Yeah. I also think, this is just, of course, my opinion. If it's something that you want to do, things that have worked out for me is just go do it. You know, maybe you don't have a big budget or anything, but go find something and shoot it how you're thinking, like, you know, I want to do this. Well, go shoot one, and you're going to learn a lot from the process of doing one. And if you do another, you know, you keep doing that, eventually you're going to be qualified and, well, you know, doing a good job at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, same. Exact. That's another thing I would say is like, if you really want to do it, then just go make one. You know, there's someone, you know, family member or a colleague or a business in the area, and just say, hey, I'd love to make a little documentary film. Mm-hmm. And then they say yes, then cool. Then just go make it, you know, shoot it with your phone, you know, like shoot it with your phone and just go from there, you know, use iMovie to edit it or whatever you want to use to edit it, something free, you know? And you learn a lot through the process. You know, you learn a lot about like the type of storytelling that you want to share with the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not always a big proponent for free work, but I think there's certain scenarios where it does make sense. I'm out of focus here.
Focus.
There we go. I think there's certain scenarios where it does make sense. You know, especially if it's the type of thing where you don't quite have your legs under you. You know, you don't want to go out here and accidentally make a big sale for a customer and then not deliver. And that's going to give you a bad reputation. So yeah. I think you're right on there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're just starting out, like do shit for free. That's what I did. You know, like I did anything for free, you know, just to kind of build a reel, build experience, build a network, you know, And then once you get to that point where, you know, you, your business, whether you're, again, you're just, you know, solo owner operator, and you're kind of just doing things by yourself, you're shooting, you're editing, you're doing the pitching, all that kind of stuff. It's a certain point where you want to branch out and you want to include a branded documentary under your belt, under your portfolio. You know, and you, and you've never done one, or maybe you've only done one, but you were just like the camera operator on it. That's an opportunity to just say, oh, hey, you know, there's a cool business. I want to do like a documentary film, mm-hmm. just to kind of get that under my belt. Just do it for free. You know, like find a business that you connect with, that you like their product, you like the service. And I'm a big believer in the barter system. You know, it's like, hey,
absolutely,
would love to shoot this thing for you. No charge, you know, just share it with if you like it, just, you know, have it on display in your iPad in the front or whatever, you know, and mm-hmm. and just share it with everyone, you know, because then that's one extra project that you have that you can use as experience, or as, again, part of the reel if you feel it's strong enough to share with future clients and future leads.
Absolutely. I think we've already covered most of this. You know, I don't want to run too long because we have a tendency to run too long, and we're trying to be disciplined here.
gotcha.
So my last question on this topic, and then we can start wrapping things up. And of course, hit that nugget of the day that Chaz is pondering on over there.
I see him.
Once it's time to deliver, David, a branded documentary or a narrative work for a commercial client, what's the best practices for delivery? That might be too broad of a question.
Like delivering the actual like file, or
no, like, not necessarily like getting them the copy of the work, but you know, do you brief them on things? Do you say much? Do you just deliver it? Do you do revisions? Like how do you work with customers in the delivery?
Oh, during the delivery phase. Yeah. I mean, well, that's definitely during, the discovery engagement and, during the discovery engagement to identify deliverables, you know? So, okay, cool. We've agreed that, you want, as a customer, you want a, 5-minute, branded documentary film. And you also want or need, some social edits for it. You know, you want a 60-second 4x5, and you also want 2 30-second 16x9s, right? Cool. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the delivery. And then based upon that, how many revisions am I as the service provider offering you? You know, I'm giving you whatever the number is. You know, generally it's 2 to 3 revisions. Anything past 3, I never do. Mm-hmm. I will always offer that, but I will say that's going to cost you extra.
Yeah, it's going to be extra money. Because as
experience has taught me, usually after the third revision, it's funny. I was on set. I was talking about this with the crew member yesterday. After the third revision, it's generally going to be dog shit, or it's something completely new. Mm-hmm. That, dude, this is not even what we even talked about during pre-production.
Right.
You know, this isn't the same. This is a completely different story now, you know, and you have to set those boundaries with the client, right? Because the client isn't the filmmaker. You are the filmmaker, right? You are the experienced one. You are the knowledgeable one. And this isn't ego. This is like the basketball coach, right? They've been doing it for 20 years. They know what they're doing. They've been mm-hmm. doing it for 20 years, right? So your job as the expert is to set those boundaries, to say, hey, after the third revision, if you do want a change in the entire timeline, that's basically double post-production fee. Because now I'm creating a brand new film for you, you know? And I may not even have all of the shots that we can use, because this is a completely different story than what we had talked about, you know? So that's usually what I do, is a two to three revisions, like that's it, maxed out, you know?
Yeah.
The social ones, again, same thing, like 2 to 3, that's it. Because after the third one, it's not going to get any better after the third revision. Like, it ain't going to get any better. It's the same, it's the same fucking shit that we shot, you know? Like, what do you want me to do? You want me to flip it upside down for you? Like, I don't know, right? Like, yeah. But again, like, that's just me bullshitting, right? I'm not like talking to the client that way.
No,
I put that in the terms and conditions, and I put that in the actual project agreement. Like, hey, you signed up on this. We're giving you 5-minute. We're giving you a 60-minute, or not 60 minute.
Oh,
we're giving
wow.
you a 60-second, and then 2 30-seconds, two revisions max, that's it. And then they come back and say, oh, hey, can we get revision? And say, I just told them, hey, look at the contract. Contract says this. If you want more, the contract also says if you want additional revision, you will be charged X amount for that.
Right.
You know? And then usually, right, that at least saves me the headache, because if they go back and they say, oh, okay, it's in the contract, they're either going to say yes or no. Right. And they say, and if they say yes, we'll pay the additional, cool. Then cool. Then you're good, right? If they say no, cool, you still got paid, right? And you don't have to go through another edit, right? So it's usually win-win at that point. I know a lot of big agencies do this I don't know why. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's just money wise, but I worked with large agencies where they will put licensing on their deliverables. So, hey, you can use this up to 1 year for advertising. And after that, that license is expired. If you want to renew the project, then we're shooting a brand new one for you. You know, I don't do that. But again, if you're working at like the largest of scales, and that's what a lot of agencies do, they put licensing dates on the project that they shoot, you know? So I don't do that. It's like, hey, man, if you want to use this for 5 years, go for it, be my guest. You know, the more money you make, the better, you know, because generally they'll come back to you, right? They'll come back the next year and say, hey, we need some new content. Cool. Let's get going on a new project, a new quote, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So I think that's best practices for like, when you're getting to that delivery stage of the project.
Absolutely. I love it. That's just a lot of great information. Chaz, so we get to the anything else. This is where I used to say, Chaz, you got anything else? Chaz, you got anything else, man?
No, I don't.
Oh, come on, man. After the drama, I thought you're going to have so much.
No. I don't have anything. No. It was dope. It was good listening.
It was. I felt like we were both listening to his podcast today.
Yeah, I was. I mean,
yeah. All right. Well, what about the nugget of the day? Do I need to drop this music, or we got all the nuggets we need for today?
Go ahead and drop it, bro.
All right. Here we go. Nugget of the day music.
It's time. Nugget of the day.
The nugget of the day, man. The
nugget of the day.
The nugget of the day, man.
All right. What you got, Chaz? What's the nugget of the day?
So, I had a nugget of the day in mind, and as I was listening y'all talk, David said a couple things, and I had to write them down because they tied into the nugget of the day. This is paraphrased, but you basically said, study the work of others to gain your inspiration, you know. Look at other films, look at photo books. I've said that before. Nothing we do is new. We're just recreating it through our own eyes. But that made me think of when you also said you can't force your vision on somebody else. A lot of times I've heard people, you know, you're trying to get somebody to buy something, and you're compromising who you are. You're compromising your business integrity just to gain that sale. And it's like I think I said it on the podcast, not everybody values the work of Picasso, you know. It's just not your client. It's okay. It's okay to say no. It's okay to turn down the work. There are people that value you. They will find you. You just have to be patient. Sometimes you do have to go out there and get them or go looking for them. But don't degrade yourself just to, you know, book another client, you know. Because at the end of the day, you're going to regret it. You're going to regret it so much. It's going to be the biggest headache you could Oh my God, it's nothing but a headache.
I think we've all been there.
You're chasing the wrong thing, you know. You may think you're chasing your dream, but you're just chasing the money at the end of the day, you know. And
you're gonna get burnt.
That, yeah, exactly. And the way, you know, like I kind of had this epiphany, I guess, like, you know, 2 or 3, I think it was right during the pandemic. It's like I was still working, which is, you know, I'm grateful for that. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's also like, man, you know, if I'm just going to do the willy-nilly stuff, if I'm just going to agree to do anything, I might as well just go back to my old job, you know? Like, at the end of the day, I might as well just go back to my old job, because if I'm not passionate about it, if I'm not passionate about this project, if the client isn't passionate, well, then I might as well just go back to doing what I was doing before, right? And just getting mm-hmm. a regular paycheck and all that, right? But we chose this dream of ours for a certain reason, you know, and we have to be resilient in our passion and in our vision. At the same time, you can't force our vision on someone else. You know, we filmmaking and client, you know, business to client, business to business, it's relationships. You know, it's like, how can I, you have a goal, how can I help you achieve that goal based upon my skill set, my talent, and our visions can combine together to make something beautiful, you know?
Mm-hmm. 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 Well said. That's some beautiful stuff.
But the original nugget of the day, it kind of just brings everything together. The nugget of the day comes from Dr. Eric Thomas, also known as E.T. the Hip Hop Preacher. The quote is,
I like E.T.
All men are created equal. Some men work harder in the preseason.
Ooh.
I mean, I don't need to elaborate, you know, that's just what it is. You know, you either working or you relaxing, you know, you either practicing or you chilling. What are you doing? You know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do to get better? That's it, bro.
That's a true nugget of the day right there.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite ones too, I think that helped me a lot, especially when you're starting out and times are getting kind of rough, you know, is a setback is a setup for a comeback.
Ooh, I like that one too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that is also from Mr. Eric Thomas. So yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. E.T. is great. He's good stuff.
Oh yeah, I love him, man. I love him.
All right, so to avoid running too much longer, David, number one, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate you sharing all this information, all your expertise with us. And I feel like all of these topics, I mean, all of these little categories we covered, I feel like could really be their own podcast, really their own episode.
For sure.
because there's just so much that, you know, I want to ask and I want to dive into. But, you know, for brevity's sake, we can't talk for 12 hours. so I want to give you a moment here, you know, to plug your channels, plug your social media. Where can people find you now that they've heard you and they see what you're about? You know, they got this little bit of a relationship with you. How can they follow along on what you're doing?
For sure. Yeah, the best way to follow me is on Instagram, IG. It's at David Lee. That's where most of my randomness comes out, you know, on set stuff and you know, trailers for films I'm working on. And then my podcast as well. It's called Inspire Design Create. It's on Apple Podcasts as well as Spotify. YouTube, I don't do YouTube anymore, but you might find some useful stuff here and there, or some, maybe some laughs or whatever. So you can find me on YouTube. Again, same handle as my IG is at David Lee. And yeah, more than welcome to you know, listen to the podcast, follow me on my journey, and hope I can follow you in yours as well.
Yeah, and everybody, take a moment out of your day to go ahead and go over and give David's podcast a rating on iTunes.
Forget about that. Yeah
it's a good podcast, and there's definitely good information from someone who's seasoned and knows the ins and outs of the industry. So do him a favor and you know, just give him a 5 stars. Don't give him a 1 star. Don't go do that. Give him a 5 star.
No, do the opposite. Just give me 1 star. I'll be good.
All 1 stars. 1 star, David. I like it. All right, man. Anybody got anything else before we wrap this thing up?
Good on my end, man. Thank you again for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Maybe we can do another one sometime. Yeah. Everybody, also rate us on the old iTunes store. And I think you can do it on Spotify. I don't know if people do Spotify ratings. I don't. I do listen on Spotify, but I don't do ratings. I do Apple ratings. Yeah, we love you guys. We thank everyone for tuning in. You know, anything you got, just leave it for us, and we'd love to discuss it on a future episode. And I've got nothing else. So as always,
peace.
Peace.